Welcome back to Shattering Myths. You may call this program at 877-300-7645. We are now turning our attention to Yahweh, the one and only name of God, and to His Torah, which means teaching. It does not mean law. For those who think that God wants to be obeyed, I've got news for you. There is no Hebrew word for obey. None. In fact, if you were to look in your Christian Bible, which is the name of a pagan sun goddess, and turn to your Old Testament, of which there isn't any, nor any New Testament either, and you were to read it and you say, God's saying all these times, I want you to obey me. The word that is actually there, that is mistranslated obey, is shama. And shama means to listen. God wants us to listen to His instructions. He does not ask us to obey Him. Today it is Teruah. Teruah is the fifth of the five steps that we take from our world, from misguided human institutions, from religion and politics, from patriotism, from economic schemes, and from militarism, to Yahweh's home. There are seven steps. The fifth of those seven steps is Teruah. We are engaged in Teruah now. It means to shout for joy that God has provided a covenant relationship that He is encouraging us to embrace, and He is invited to walk to Him and to receive the benefits of the covenant. Each of these 7 days has a specific aspect associated with it that we benefit from. In fact, the five benefits of the covenant, the most alluring of those benefits, are all given to us during the first 4 days of these festival feasts, of these parties that God has invited us to. The first being Pesach, where we become immortal. We are no longer mortal. We become immortal on Pesach by observing it, by capitalizing on this offer. And then on unleavened bread, we have the sin that we have incurred as a result of our rebellion against God, of our twisting and corrupting His testimony. That is removed from us so that we become perfect on matzah. And then as a result of these 2 days, of those who observe them, the third day is Bukurim. It means first fruits. We are born anew as a new creation, a spiritual child into God's covenant family. As a result of our adoption into His family, on the fourth of the 7 steps that we are encouraged to walk to God, we are enriched and empowered by Him. We are enriched because we inherit everything that is His. The single most valuable thing that we are enriched with is His Torah teaching. And we are empowered, becoming greater than we would otherwise be, also enabled and prepared to share His message. Which is why on Teruah, we are encouraged to not only shout for joy, to tell people that these things exist, that God's exist, that He can be known, and that the terms and conditions of His covenant can be understood and embraced and accepted. But also, a warning to tell people that if you are pursuing a God by any name other than Yahweh, if you are trying to engage with Him in a manner that first provides your salvation as opposed to relationship, if you would identify with religion or politics, that those paths do not lead to God, but instead away from Him. And so today is Teruah, where we shout this news from the mountaintop to all who are open to listening. Now, we've had Jason from Pennsylvania on the line here now for quite some time during almost the first three quarters of our first hour. So, Jason, I want to thank you for being so patient. And I understand that as you have communicated with Scott, beloved producer of the Shattering Mist show, that you have a question about Yahusha and whether or not he will return. Is that correct, Jason?
That's correct, Yada. And I just want to say, first of all, bless you. I caught one of your shows recently. I've been listening for a couple weeks now. And when you mentioned that the King James Version of the Bible is basically just, like, complete, like, a total lie, it just blew my mind so much. But it felt right at the same time. So before I get into the main question, I would like to ask you, what translation, if any, is there of the, I don't even want, of, yeah. Yah's word, of Yah's word, can we go to?
That's a great question. First, let me clarify precisely what I said on regarding the King James. Do you have a moment? You can stay with us a little bit longer, and we can actually chat about some of these topics, Jason.
Bless you. I'll stay with you as long as you want me to.
Okay, great. Okay, great. Then let's chat about the first thing that you brought up. Yes, I've said that your English Bible translations are unreliable, and I've said that for a lot of reasons. One is that the very term Bible is a corrupted term. It's named after a sun goddess in Egypt. God does not name his testimony after a sun goddess. So if you're reading a book called the Bible, I can tell you for certain that does not bear Yahweh's trademark. He inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. The second aspect that I would share with you is that your English Bible is most likely divided into two categories, neither of which are accurate, Old Testament and New Testament. God only has one Testament. He only has one set of testimony. He only has one message. His message did not change, is not going to change, will never change. That's why he is dependable. Should God have said, you know, this is my plan, and oh, by the way, that plan is a really crappy plan. I really don't like that plan. No one is able to use that plan successfully. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create an entirely new plan. If God had said that, he would not be trustworthy. You would have to be a fool to trust his new plan.
Right.
If he lied to you about his original plan. If his original plan failed, there is no reason to believe that his new plan will prevail. So, what I said specifically about the King James is that it was created for a political purpose. King Iams at the time, who we now call James, was extraordinarily corrupt. And his goal was to continue to beguile people into believing that he had a God-given right to rule. The unification of church and state that permeated Europe for so many centuries, this unification between what typically was the Roman Catholic Church and the monarchs of Europe. The church would say that the kings had the right to rule, that it was a God-given right to rule over the people, and the kings and queens would say that there was only one allowable religion, and that the source of that religion was the Roman Catholic Church. And so they oppressed the people and beguiled the people to serve their own interest. So there was a very popular translation of the Bible, Jason, at the time called the Geneva Bible. And in the Geneva Bible, and I've used this term because man has been beguiled using this term Bible for a very long time, but that's the name of this text. They, in their footnotes, pointed out that there was no mandate in Scripture for a king to rule over the people. And that the only place that God even talks about a mandate for his people is for Yisrael. And so there was none. And, of course, that was very threatening to King Iams. So the man we now know as King James asked Sir Francis Bacon, who was an occultist, to create a revision of the Geneva Bible that was popular for the express purpose of authorizing and legitimizing his rule as if it were God-given. All you need to do is read the preface of the King James to know that's the case.
Right.
Now, moving one step further. Paul's letters have to all be rejected. Paul spoke against Yahweh and against the Torah. He does not quote Yahusha even once. And what he has to say is, but I, Paul, say, is the antithesis of what Yahusha said. It is the opposite of what Yahweh said. If God told us the truth in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, then Paul lied. If Yahusha told us the truth in his testimony as it's recorded by the eyewitnesses, then Paul lied. So the first thing you have to do is you've got to reject everything that Paul wrote. That's half of the Christian so-called New Testament. And then in the Christian so-called New Testament, you have two books that are supposed to be biographical books that were hearsay. Luke wasn't there. Mark wasn't there. Hearsay is always problematic. And then you have two books, one by Matanyah and the other by Yahochanan. Matanyah means Yah's gift. Yahochanan means Yahweh is merciful. That were originally, and we know for certain about Matanyah, were written in Hebrew. because Yosha spoke Hebrew and were translated into Greek. And each time you translate something, you lose part of the message. But beyond that...
Could I ask one question?
Sure.
I thought, didn't they say that the Messiah spoke Aramaic? Is it that, yeah. that was mm-hmm. true?
Now, it's partially true.
Okay.
We don't know to the degree that he spoke Aramaic. One of the conclusions that has been proven to be false by the Dead Sea Scrolls and the letters that are contained in the cache of materials from the Dead Sea Scrolls and letters that now have been unearthed throughout Israel is that during the first century, using our time chronology here, in Israel there was this myth that that Hebrew was no longer spoken, that Aramaic, which was the dominant language of the day, in Israel, turns out to be untrue. As a matter of fact, even when you read the Greek eyewitness, the translation that we have now of the eyewitness accounts, what you find is there was much that was spoken in Hebrew. And there were lots of personal letters that were exchanged, people writing in Hebrew. And so it appears that this scholarly myth that he spoke Aramaic and did not speak Hebrew based upon the evidence that we have available to us is untrue. Now, the other thing to note is that Aramaic and Hebrew are very similar languages.
Okay.
Hebrew and Greek are extraordinarily different languages. So it is extremely easy to convey Hebrew thoughts in Aramaic, but extremely difficult to do so in Greek.
Okay, now, may I ask another question?
Sure, sure. Uh-huh.
When he cried from the cross, Eli, lama, sabachthani, what do you believe that meant?
Well, that's a great question, but that's a question that was going to lead us a bit afield here. But I'm going to answer that question for you. No, don't apologize.
Okay.
What I'm hoping is that we can still turn back and answer your questions on translations. But we're gonna attempt to do that.
Your brain to me is just incredible, because I've been listening for, like I said, a couple weeks, and that's why I'm asking you these questions, because I'm looking for the truth.
Okay, well, I'm glad. And understand that I should not be credited with anything. I don't want credit for anything. All I'm attempting to do is to convey to individuals like yourself, and particularly those in search of the truth, what Yahweh had to tell us. And so the degree that I can accurately convey what he told us, you should give him the credit and not me. We're going to return. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths, this Teruah Day. Teruah, of course, is the day where God tells us, encourages us. He doesn't really tell us anything in the sense of ordering us, and that's the way that kind of came across, and I apologize for that. But God encourages us to both shout for joy, to tell people that God has created a plan that enables us to be adopted into his family. And that also he encourages us to tell people, shout out a warning, that all religious and political paths are unreliable and that they lead away from him as opposed to him. That is the purpose of this day. During the break, Scott, our beloved producer here, said, isn't this a Jewish holiday today? Yeah, the religious Jews celebrate today as Rosh Hashanah. They know that today is Yom Teruah. They know what Teruah means. They know the importance of this day. And by the way, this day marks the harvest, where those children of Yahweh prior to the tribulation will be harvested and taken away from this planet. But they know that that is God's instruction, but you can't make a religion out of God's instruction, and there's no money if you can't create a religion. You can't control people without a religion. And so religious Jews, during their captivity in Babylon, decided that they would rename Yom Teruah Rosh Hashanah. Hashanah means head of the year, start of the year. And while Yah's new year starts in Aviv, on the 14th day with Pesach, which is always in the spring, the religious Jewish New Year starts in the fall to commemorate the religions of the sun gods of old. We were talking with Jason, and Jason asked, you know, can you explain why Yahusha said, my God, why have you forsaken me? And Here's the answer to that, Jason. It's a fairly complex answer, but if you understand this, then you will cease to be, and I'm not speaking to you personally, I'm speaking to the audience as a whole. Anyone who understands this will cease to be a Christian. This is one of the statements that was the most troubling for me as a Christian, because as a Christian, you're told by Paul that your Jesus Christ was the totality of God, that the totality of the Godhead, whatever a Godhead is, resided on him bodily, so that he was the totality of God. Now, even that, if you're a thinking individual, you realize that's impossible. The totality of God doesn't fit into a man. God is bigger than man. But it's just the reality of a God big enough to create the entire universe. If the entire presence of such God entered and stood upon earth, the earth would be incinerated, as well as all life on it. But this notion that the totality of God was on him, because the Christian religion needed a new God, because they didn't like that God of the Torah. So they needed their Jesus Christ to be the totality of God, which is a myth. So here you have Yahusha denouncing that idea by saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? What he is doing by making that statement is he is quoting the 22nd Psalm. He is telling you that if you want to know the answer to the question of what I am doing here and who I am and what I'm about to do for you, Jason, you need to turn to the 22nd Psalm.
No, I get it. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Uh-huh. Okay, I didn't know if I was on. I totally get that, and I understood that already. What I was asking you was that translation. There's even debate that he said, my God, why have you forsaken me on the cross? A lot of people have a different translation of Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. So you're saying you do believe that the translation of that is, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Oh, I am positive. By the way, there was no cross, so we have to identify that for a moment. Let me finish, please, the explanation of. And I appreciate the fact that you understand what happened on the upright pole on Pesach.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But, I said cross. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. No, don't apologize. What I want to do though is let me finish that thought for other listeners, just so that they have an appreciation, because if he said that on the upright pole of Passover, then he could not have been the totality of God.
Right.
He could not be speaking to a God that's off there who is now forsaking him if he was the totality of God. If the fullness of the Godhead resided on him bodily, he could not be talking to a God over there, out there, that had now forsaken him. To forsake, by the way, he's quoting from the Hebrew word azab. It means to separate from. And the reason that Yahweh's spirit had to separate from the body and soul of Yahusha on the upright pole of Passover. And the Greek term steros is an upright pole. There is no cross. Cross is a pagan symbol. That the upright pole of Pesach, of Passover, is that God can't die. And God cannot be associated with death. And that God cannot even go to the place of separation from God. And so the spirit of Yahweh had to leave the body and soul, the consciousness of Yahusha, on the upright pole of Passover, so that Passover and its promises and its benefits, and unleavened bread and its promises and benefits, and Bukkudim and its benefits. I am your host, Yada. We're chatting with Jason. Jason, I'm about ready to turn full circle here and return to your initial question by using your second question.
Thank you.
And that is that specifically the exact words and the language that he spoke, I think we would be unwise to say for certain that we knew for certain precisely what he said or what language he spoke, whether it was Hebrew or Aramaic. And the reason I have to say that is that when you you look at the oldest 69 manuscripts that have been unearthed from most all of them, I think all of them, in fact, that have been found in the dry sands in Egypt, because most manuscripts, early manuscripts of the eyewitness accounts written by the disciples of Yahusha were specifically destroyed by the Jewish religious leaders. And so we have a very difficult time finding copies there. And, of course, it's very hazardous to do an archaeological dig in Israel because the so-called Palestinians have a conniption fit. So the 69 manuscripts we found that predate Constantine of the Greek testimony are all found in Egypt. Now, when you compare them to the Textus Receptus, which is the basis of most English translations, and then later an amalgamized version called the Nestle Allen, there are over 300,000 known discrepancies between them. That means that of the 182,000 approximate words that exist in the so-called Christian New Testament, there are 300,000 variations. So you have to start with the fact that we can't, the evidence dictates that we can't rely on what we have. Second, I mentioned Yohanan, John, was an eyewitness. And yet the single most quoted story that's chronicled in Yohanan in churches is the one about where the adulterous woman comes to him and he allegedly writes something in the sand and he says, he who was without sin cast the first stone.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. The earliest manuscript that actually has that story is from the 8th century. 100% of the thousands of manuscripts that exist from the late 1st century through the 7th century don't have that story. The story first appears in the 8th century, and yet you'll read it in every English Bible.
Very good. Yada, could I break in for one sec?
Sure.
Okay, this is why I asked the question in the first place, because I'm,
okay.
I'm sure you're aware of Dr. Bill Deagle, right?
Yes, I've heard of him. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, he said that line, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, he says what it means is, Eli, Eli, come and fulfill the will of the Creator God. That's what he said it meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not an accurate translation of Aramaic.
Okay.
It's not an accurate rendering of the words. As I understand it, Bill Deagle has also said that he's a self-appointed, that he's a godly appointed a spokesperson from Yahweh, and that he is the new Moses in that regard. I would always be very skeptical of people who make such claims. Now, I know this... this network hosts his show. I do not know him personally. I did take the time to read about him when I began to do this show because my exposure to the Genesis Communication Network happened to be as a guest of a guest host on his program. One of his publicists was asked to be a guest host, had me on, and said, I want to talk about the 20 most prevalent religious myths in Christendom, and that's where I got to know the owner of the Genesis Communication Network, and this program is a direct result of that one-hour program. So I can all I'm going to tell you is that in Yatiya, the book that is available at yatiya.com for free, that passage is translated out of Aramaic. It's translated out of Greek. It is translated for you in English. And each of the words is outlined, and it is a direct quotation of the 22nd Psalm. And so if you actually knew what he was saying and why he was saying it, the reason that it is extraordinarily easy on this one particular case to be absolutely certain that we know what he said is because he was quoting Yahweh. He was quoting the 22nd Psalm. So in this case, you don't have to rely. Anytime you don't have to rely on the Greek text, which has been so poorly maintained, so callously translated. And here's the rule of thumb. We'll finish the thought on the unreliable of the text of the so-called Christian New Testament. But in this particular case, we know for certain what he said, is that On average, about 20% of the words in the Greek text are inconsistent with the words that are on the oldest manuscripts. About 20% of the time, the words in Greek are horribly mistranslated. For example, there's a divine placeholder that is used for Yahweh's name, for Yahusha's name, and for the title Messiah. And yet those placeholders are ignored, and that bogus names that were created quite recently, like Jesus, are substituted. And God's name is replaced, Yahweh is replaced by the title of Satan, the Lord. Sure. So you've got that issue. Then you've got the issue of inadequately conveyed concepts. Like, for example, let's use holy. You know, there is probably a way that you could associate holy with that which is set apart unto God. But it, man, you have to go to a lot of work to get there. And if you don't understand the concept of set apart, you don't know who Yahusha is. You don't know what God is inviting us from and to.
Absolutely.
And so all of those things shade the fact that we normally cannot rely that 80% of what we read in the so-called Christian New Testament is either inadequately translated, errantly translated, or it is based upon an inaccurate text.
Right.
Now, okay, go ahead.
All right, I just want to say this. You are coming from an intellectual standpoint, and I'm saying this because I've listened for a while now, and I can say without a doubt that you probably have one of the most incredible minds that are on the earth right now, and I'm not just kissing up. I'm saying, thank you. Okay?
That's sad. Is it sad if it's true? I hope it's not true, Jason.
I'm sure it is, Yada. Okay, and this is why I'm saying this, because I'm sure there's a lot of very well-meaning quote-unquote Christians, believers in Messiah that are listening to you, that are, you might get a lot of hateful mail because you're coming from, you're speaking in terms that they feel like their entire world has been destroyed because your language is so on such a higher level than they are. I really do feel that all works for good. That for those that love God or Yah. And I really feel that the message has been conveyed, and it's probably been perverted to a point where it's not on the level that it should be, but it has been communicated through the King James for enough people to get it. Do you understand what I'm saying? And
yeah, let's deal with both the points that you've made here, okay. If I might. And before I do, I'm a stickler for realizing that there are other people out there like you, Jason, that are searching for the truth. And so if we leave something dangling, I want to go back to it. So let me first go back to the thing we left dangling, which is in this one particular case, for somebody to come up with a bogus translation of what Yahusha said on the upright pole of Pesach is inexcusable. Because in this particular case, he was quoting Scripture. He was quoting Yahweh. He was quoting a song inspired by Yahweh, written by the most intellectual man who has ever lived. The greatest genius, the man with the greatest mind in human history. It's not Einstein. It's not Newton. The greatest mind in human history is a fellow named Dodd. We've corrupted his name, which actually means love, to David. His mind is so vastly superior to any other human intellect. And it's one of the reasons, and maybe the primary reason, that Yahweh loved this man so much. And his psalm, his 22nd psalm, speaks not only those, begins with those same words. My God, why have you forsaken me?
That's right.
And it uses azab as the term for forsaken, which is the operative term here. That is the verb. Azab is a term that conveys what we consider damnation. Damnation does not mean to be punished. It means to be separated. To be damned is to separate. So if I use the term God damn religion, I'm saying that God separates himself from religion. The idea of forsaken, why have you forsaken me? To forsake is to separate from. And so he was saying, my God, why have you separated yourself from him. Now, in Hebrew, the interrogative isn't written like we do in English. An interrogative sets up a something for us to think about, something for us to understand. And what he was doing is two things. He was saying, if you want to understand who I am, if you understand what I am doing here fulfilling Passover and how I'm going to go about fulfilling separation from God, which is matzah, and how I'm going to go and fulfill Bukkudim, which is first fruits, which Christians have corrupted to Easter. If you want to understand it, read the 22nd Psalm.
Yeah.
It explains it. In fact, it's vastly more accurate and detailed in its explanation of what happened on those 3 days than anything recorded in the eyewitness accounts.
Right.
And so, because we know for certain what azaba means, there is no justification for going off on a tangent and saying, oh, this is what that means. The reason that Christians have to twist it is because if the statement is accurate, it destroys their religion.
Right.
If the statement is accurate, if Yosha is saying, God, why are you separating yourself from me? Why are you forsaking me? Why are you damning me? If that true statement is true, then the Christian religion is false. And so Christians have to either ignore it or twist it.
Well, see, Yada, before I started listening to you, I didn't have a problem with that. I understood what it meant, and I didn't have a problem with it because I was taught by a teacher named Chuck Missler that I'll use the name Jesus. I don't want to, but
Yosha.
Right,
Yosha. Yosha is his name. Jesus is a really corrupt term. Yosha means Yahweh saves. We're going to have to get to your statement and question after the break in our last segment. Jason,
right.
This is Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada, and we encourage you to participate in this conversation, and we encourage Jason to return and to continue to enlighten us. Business of shattering one of the most important myths in the world, that is the myth of Christendom. What I want to convey, and I think we have inadvertently lost Jason, I see the line is now reading idle, and I apologize for that, Jason. It was completely inadvertent, and we not only hope that you call back, but we hope that you call back often. The statements you have made have all been extraordinarily helpful in revealing to our listeners how questioning things can lead to understanding. One of the things, though, I just want to conclude with Jason, and then we're going to go on to Vince, is that Jason listed three individuals, and he was talking about, you know, how these individuals have taught or said one thing or another. And what I want to do is return to the first hour of this program, where one way things that Scott mentioned is this whole idea of if you give a person a fish, you may satisfy them for a moment, but if you teach them to fish, you've given them a source of nourishment that can last a lifetime and a sense of purpose and a sense of understanding. And so what I would strongly encourage all of the Jasons in the world to do, and Jason, I really want you to call back. Hopefully you'll call back on our program tomorrow. Is don't rely on any individual. Don't look at any individual as being enlightened. The most that I can possibly do is I can help to shatter the myths, to clean away the gunk that is a misconception that has been inspired by either religion or politics or patriotism or some other human scheme. I can help provide a proper perspective so that you begin to view things of God from the perspective that God provided, which is the Torah. And I hope to be able to, and that's the purpose of this program, it's particularly the purpose of an intro to god.org. Go to an intro to god.org. The purpose of that book is to equip you with the tools so that you can come to know Yahweh yourself. You can delve into the 22nd Psalm and the 88th Psalm and Yasayahu 53, and you can understand precisely what was happening on those three, the most important days in human history. And that rather than getting your teaching to a flawed individual such as myself, you're getting your instruction, your guidance, your teaching directly from the creator of the universe, directly from Yahweh. And there is nothing more exciting or more rewarding or more nourishing or more fulfilling than that. Now we have Vince on the line. Let's go to Vince. And good morning. Vince, I understand you live in Wyoming.
Yes, Yada. Yeah, and thanks to all your hard work and the others at Yada Yada that do the editing and stuff like that. It's a wonderful site. You know, having come out of Christianity, I just have to say that, you know, it really is black and white. I mean, Christianity, to me now, is a purely satanic religion, as are all religions. And I can clearly see where Satan sets himself up, and he'll exploit God on one side, and then he'll exploit humankind on the other side. Forgive me, I'm kind of, you know, emotional with
talking on live TV
or whatever.
Yeah,
but anyway,
no, you
he exploits
be.
The two extremes for his sex. Well, he doesn't want sex, power, money. He wants to be like, he wants to be perceived as God.
Right.
But the ones that work with him in religion and politics, those leaders, they'll exploit the same people for sex, power, money, and the
yep.
people themselves, all up and down the chain, will exploit each other for many of the same reasons.
Correct. You know,
so
Jason, Vince, one of the things you said is just rings a bell with me. When Jerry Falwell passed away, one of the most famous Christian pastors in American history, before he passed away, we were good friends. I told you, at one time I was an evangelical Christian. I was like you. I was a Christian. I was beguiled. I had to change when I realized that the truth did not coexist. Christianity and the truth are separate things. The Christianity is false. If what God said is true, then Christianity is false. And so when I did that, I initially, like you, very emotional because, wow, this is important stuff. And we've got people like Jerry Falwell misleading people. So I went immediately to him with this 12-page document that was a white paper on all of the things that I had already learned that were untrue about Christianity. Easter, Sunday worship, Christmas, Jesus, Christ, God dying, Trinity. And it goes on and on and on. And I went to salvation through faith and the gospel of grace. I went down and I presented this paper not only to Jerry Falwell, but to Jerry Falwell's two leading scholars associated with his university. And after about 4 hours of going through all of this, they said, everything you've said is true. We can't refute any of it. But if we were to say these things, there would be no one sitting in the pews of our church. And the envelopes that come in that fund this university would cease to arrive. And as a result of that, they would label us and you a kook. Don't say these things. They knew the truth. This is Shattering Myths.
I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you should...